So we're on Chaf Vav Amud Aleph. Now what we're going to try to figure out today is why does Reish Lakish always assume that this individual that they encounter on their way to Asya, if you remember, is a Kohen? Why is Reish Lakish always starting up with the Kohen as far as Shvius is concerned? So let's just review. There are two Chachamim that are on the way to be Ma'aber the Shana, and Reish Lakish says, I'm going to join them. He wants to learn about Ibur Shana. How do you add another month, or when, under what circumstances, to the calendar year? And on their way, they pass various fields, and they see that even though it's a Shvius year, there are people working in the fields. And Reish Lakish looks at the Chachamim, and he says to them, these are Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon, he says to them, why aren't you objecting? Why are you letting this go by? People are working in their fields. He has a coin. He's working in his field on Shvius. So they give an excuse. Maybe he's a sachir. He doesn't own the field. He's working in the field for a guy. They see another man. He's working the vines. So again, Reish Lakish says, look at this coin. He's working the vines on Shvius. This is a terrible violation. We got to put a stop to this. Why you, Rav Chiya and Rav Shimon, are being very silent about it? Why are you letting it go by? Well, you know what? He could give us the excuse that he's doing it for the purpose of La'akel Beis Chabad. He's not improving the land. He's only taking off branches, which he needs to create a utensil, as we said before, that when they press the olives, they would to produce oil. They would have to gather together the olives so that they would not spread around. So once again, the Chachamim are finding some sort of a justification, but Reish Lakish is very adamant about it. You know, he's insistent that they are allowing violations of Shvius to pass without objecting. So the Gemara asks, Maishna Kohen. If you could tell me where it is, thank you, in the daf, so that we all. Yes, so we're on Chaf Vav Amud Aleph. The middle of the page, is it parallel to anything or any shortcuts there? Maishna Kohen. All right, we all have it? No, we don't have it.
I think I'm close.
I actually left the Gemara here yesterday on Shabbos. I left the Gemara for myself, but I don't know where it disappeared. Okay, it doesn't matter. But you have the place?
Two lines below Yimkruv, I tell us.
Yeah, Yimkruv, right.
Okay. So the Gemara says the following. Maishna Kohen, why is it that that Reish Lakish always assumes that the person who's violating Shvius is a Kohen? And the Gemara answers, Mishum dechashidi ashvius, because the Kohanim were suspect of violating Shvius. And how do I know such a thing? So that's what the Gemara is going to try to prove from a Bryce, there's a Tosefta in the 7th and the 6th pack of Masechta Trumas. And let's give a little bit of a background to this Bryce. We have something here which is called in English a mixture. In the language of the Shas, it's called a taroves. A taroves means an eruv of two different things. And in this case, we have a taroves of truma and shvius. So we have fruits that were grown in the 7th year. They have kedusha shvius, and they got mixed up with other fruits that would truma. Now, when I use the word fruits, it's really not precise, because truma applies only to two fruits, which is zeisim v'anovim. But truma applies to the five species of grains. So the real word here would be grains. But there are fruits, as I mentioned before, zeisim v'anovim, olives and grapes, that are prohibited under the law of are included in the mitzvah of truma. Now, who can eat truma? Only Kohen. Only a Kohen can eat truma. Am I right? Does anybody know what the violation, if a non-Kohen, a Zar, would eat truma, what kind of a punishment he gets? Misa v'dei shamayim. Misa v'dei shamayim. It's a little bit less than Karis, but it's up there. I mean, this is a serious violation. So now, if you have a mixture of Peros Shvias together with truma, so we can ask the following question. Well, the issue here about eating this mixture would only apply to a non-Kohen, correct? A Kohen could eat this mixture, because even in the worst case scenario, if it's truma, he's allowed to eat truma. Okay. So take a look at this brisa. The brisa says sa'ah, or se'ah, actually, if you pronounce it correctly, which is a certain volume, which is the equivalent of six kamin, truma. So we have here fruits of truma, and it's a serious amount. Shenafla got mixed up. Lemea se'in shel shvius. So it's 100 times the volume of the truma. Which, if I would stop here, and I would ask you, is there bittul? And the answer would be yes. Why? Because the ratio for bittul with regard to truma is 1 to 100. 1 to 100. Truma is the exception to the rule. There's also another exception in the case of orla, but primarily truma is the exception to the 1 to 60 rule. And instead of 1 to 60, the rule is 1 to 100. But here you have exactly that. You have 1 to 100. The Brisa deliberately set up the ratio between the truma and the shvius as 1 to 100. So the Brisa says tala. Tala is the same as tisbatel, which means that you could apply the principle of bittul, and the truma is batel now in the shvius. And therefore, even a non-Kohen would be allowed to eat this mixture. Even though within this mixture he's definitely eating truma, but the truma is batel. And this is the principle, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, called Iser Nefach Lios Heter. That if there's bittul, then we completely null and void the status of Iser, and the Torah says that it's mutter. Which is really magical, that the Torah could take something that's asur and make it mutter, but that's the nature of bittul. Now you may ask me, but how can you eat this mixture, which is made up of 100 times shvius of one time of truma? But the answer is that shvius is not asur b'achila. On the contrary, the Torah commands us v'ochla, that we should eat the pears of shvius. And that's a mitzvah that's incumbent upon every single Jew. Again, there are certain prohibitions about selling the peiros of shvius or destroying them, but as far as eating them, we're all included in that mitzvah of eating shvius. So that once the truma is batel, even if I'm not a kohen, I should be, and I am allowed to eat this mixture. But lepachos mikan, what happens if the volume of shvius is 99? It's not 100 sah, but it's only 99 sah. So now we have no bittul, because for the, what's the magic number for bittul in the case of truma?
100 to 1.
It's 100 to 1, and we don't have 100 to 1 now. We only have 99 to 1. So what do we do in this case? Yerokvu. We let everything rot. Now wait a second. Let everything rot. Okay, so the truma is not bittul. Who should be eating this mixture?
Kohen.
A Kohen. Why are you telling me we have to let everything rot? The Kohen is allowed to eat truma, and for sure he has a mitzvah of eating shvius, no less than anyone else has a mitzvah of eating shvius. Vavinen ba, and after we quoted this price, we asked the following question. Amai yerokfu, why should you allow it to get ruined and spoiled when we're allowed to eat pears of shvius? Yimkarena le Kohen, why don't we simply sell this mixture to a Kohen? So again, we're assuming that the mixture was owned by a non-Kohen, but he could sell it to a Kohen. Bidmei Truma. Now again, the Kohen is not going to pay a full price for this because of the law of supply and demand. Truma is always cheaper on the market because it can only be sold to a Kohen. Only a Kohen has vested interest in buying the Truma. But nevertheless, let him purchase the Truma at the price of Truma. So the going rate of a saw of Truma would be X, whatever it is. Yeah, but now we have a problem because we also have 99 parts of Shvius. Are we allowed to sell Shvius?
No.
We're not allowed to sell Shvius because although we're allowed to eat Shvius, we have a mitzvah of eating Shvius, but we can't sell it. So how is he going to sell this mixture to a Kohen? Now, you might ask a different question. Okay, let's say he doesn't want to sell it to a Kohen. Let him give it to a Kohen as a gift. And that would obviate all your problems. But nevertheless, the Gemara now wants to know if he could sell it to a Kohen. So he's going to sell the Truma that's in this mixture to the Kohen, but he's not allowed to sell the Shvius in this mixture because the Iser of Schora Beperos Shvius.
Can he have enough of it?
He could have enough from it, he's just not allowed to sell it. So the Gemara says, Chutz Midmei Osa Sa. So what he could do is, he can do a combo in which he says that he'll sell only the Truma element in this mixture, and he's going to obviate the law. Now, let me read to you a note here, which I think helps shed a light on this kasha of the Gemara. Amar Torah, the Torah says at the end of Sefer Vayikra, that there's a certain period of time in which you're allowed to eat the Shvius. What is that period of time? It's as long as it's lebehemtcha ulachaya, etc. Which means the Gemara Darshan's in Psochim calls mancha chaya ocheles mi min zemen asode. If the season is such that as far as this particular species, the animals are still out there eating minasada, is then fine. Avakola lechaya minasada, in other words, this min is no longer growing out in the fields, is then kale lebehemtcha minabayas, which means this is called the Zman Biur. Have you ever heard of the Zman Biur? Okay, let me write this on the board if I can get myself oriented. You know, after Shabbos, we always have to figure out where everything is here. Okay. Let's see, can we... Okay, we're halfway there. Oh, Shkei, thank you so much. Okay, so we have what's called Shas HaBiur, which means the following. That up until a certain moment in time, which is called Shas HaBiur, we eat the peros of Shvius. And as I said before, that's a mitzvah. But the Torah says that there's a limit in terms of the season, in terms of the time. And if you pass that limit, you pass that expiration date, so to speak, then you can no longer eat the Shvius, and they have to be taken out and burnt. That's called Biur. Biur means the burning. Now, when do we have to burn the Shvius if we waited too long? What is that expiration date? That's called Kola Minachaya Minasoda. It means that if that min, that species, is no longer growing in the fields, and therefore the animals are not able to eat it, so that's called the Shas HaBiur. And the Zman HaBiur of each min, in Kedusha Shvius is a little bit different, you know, because some species grow in the field a little bit later in the season, some terminate earlier in the season. That's called the Zman HaBiur. Okay. So now, we have a Gemara in Masechta Avodah Zarah that looks at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says about Shvius li'achla. Okay, that's the same Pasuk that we were referring to before, actually one Pasuk earlier, at the end of Vayikra. Li'achla. And the Gemara establishes li'achla v'lo l'schora. that we're not allowed to sell peros of shvi'is. We're only allowed to eat the peros of shvi'is. So how do we reconcile that principle with what it says here in the Gemara, that the Gemara says that if you have a mixture of shvi'is, 99 to 1 of truma, that you sell it to a Kohen, in the Gemara's question, how are you allowed to sell the peros of shvi'is? So if you take a look at Rashi, there's a Rashi here, Dibra Masel Bidmei, and Rashi says, I'm just going to summarize the Rashi, that you're allowed to sell peros of shvi'is on the condition that the shvi'is that will be purchased will be eaten, and the monies that you receive as a barter, as an exchange for the peros shvi'is, will be used before the zman of bir. Why? Because the dmei peros, the money of peros, let's say I'm the seller and you're the buyer, you're buying the fruits in order to eat them, I'm going to take those dmei peros, and now the sanctity of the shvi'is is transferred over to the damim, over to the monies, because it was given as payment for shvi'is. So I'll use those dmei peros, before the zman of bir, because again, the mitzvah of achilas peros shvi'is continues until, but not beyond, the zman of bir, as we mentioned here initially. Now, do you find this Rashi Dibra Maskel B'dmei?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you find the Tosis Dibra Maskel Yimkaru?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So Tosis adds another point of it. He says that Kisha Osa B'mikra V'lo B'ofen Kavua Ein Zeh Nechshav Schora. So he has another element to the equation here. Rashi says the reason why you're allowed to sell this mixture, which is mostly 99% is made up of shvi'is, and we don't do business with shvi'is, is because the buyer intends to eat the shvi'is, and the seller is going to use the dmei shvi'is B'kedusha shvi'is. So it's not undermining in any way the Kedusha Shvi'is. That's Rashi's opinion. Tosfos adds another element into the equation, and he says that if you're selling it only on a one-time basis, because you have this mixture, and you don't want to eat it because it's got Truma mixed in, and the Truma is not batel because it's a ratio of 1 to 99, that's not called Schora. Schora means someone who, on a regular basis, sells Peros Shvi'is. Now there's a third answer, which is offered by Tosfos, but it's not here in Masechta Sanhedrin, it's rather in Masechta Rosh Hashanah. And there Tosfos says that if he originally harvested the fruits in order to eat the peros, that was his original intention, but he has leftover fruits which he wasn't able to eat, he's allowed to sell that on the market. So in any event, we have three different answers to the question as to why our Brisa allows you to sell this mixture, which is 99% peros shvi'is, when you're not allowed to sell peros shvi'is. You either have the answer of Rashi that you're allowed to sell peros shvi'is if you're not doing it for a business deal, but rather that the buyer is going to eat the peros shvi'is. Number two, you have the answer of Tosfos that here it's mutter because you're not doing it on a regular basis. And finally, you have Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah, who says that if your original intention at the time of harvest was to eat it, but you have a surplus, that surplus you're allowed to sell on the market. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says now, let's sell this mixture. Chutz midmei osasa. In other words, when the Kohen buys this mixture, he's going to buy the mixture minus the truma. He's going to pay the price of 99 sa'a of shvi'is, and we explained why that's not asur. And he won't pay for the truma. Now, before we said, yimkarenu l'kohen b'dmei truma, which means that you can sell him at a cheaper price for the truma. But now the Gemara is assuming that you're not allowed to sell the kohen that one element of truma. Now, we don't know where the truma is, but that's irrelevant. The Kohen can eat this whole mixture because he's allowed to eat truma. But as far as the price that the seller is going to charge for this mixture, he's going to charge him only for the 99 of peros shvi'is, but not for the sa of truma. And yet the Mishnah says, the Braisa says, Yerokvu, that we don't recognize this possible arrangement. We insist that the entire mixture be spoiled. Let it go the natural way of all flesh. The Omer Abchia Mishmei de Ula Zosomeres, the reason why we're not going to sell this mixture to a Kohen is because Nechshedu Kohanim Ashvis. So you want to underline those three words. Nechshedu Kohanim Ashvis. We're afraid that the Kohen will not treat the Peros properly. And by giving Peros Ashvis to a Kohen, you're in effect causing the desecration of the sanctity of Shvius, because the Kohanim are not going to treat the Shvius the way they have to do, which means they're not going to fulfill the mitzvah of protecting the pair of Shvius, make sure they don't get ruined. They're going to sometimes delay eating the pair of Shvius until after the Zman Bir, and we said that you have to eat the pair of Shvius before the Zman Bir. Oh. Now, I asked you the following question before. And that is, why is it that when you're selling this mixture in the Havamina of the Gemara, before the Gemara knew that Kohanim Chashudim, that you have to subtract from the value that saw of Truma? Why not charge the Kohen a cheaper price, the going rate in the market amongst Kohanim for Truma? Like Truma, let's say, slash price, it's worth 20% of the price of chulin, but at least that 20% in that saw you should be able to get. So the answer is that there's a mitzvah to give truma to a kohen. A Yisrael is not allowed to sell truma to a kohen. If we have a situation where there is truma out there and it's not it doesn't obligate a mitzvah of Nesina LeKohen, only in those rare circumstances would be allowed to charge the Kohen a certain price for the Truma. Like I'll give you an example. Let's say one Kohen would want to sell his Truma to another Kohen. He's not obligated in this case to give the Truma to a Kohen. So therefore he could charge the Kohen a price, again, admittedly a fraction of the full price of chulin, but he can charge. But here, the Yisrael went ahead and he was mafresh truma. Now he has perish shvius, and accidentally they got mixed up together in a tarovah. So now he, the Yisrael, has an obligation to make sure that he gives this truma to the kohen. He's not allowed to charge the kohen truma, a payment for the truma. If he charges him a fee for the truma, then he undermines his mitzvah of nesina lekohen. Because the mitzvah of giving matnas kahuna means gratis. You can't take money for that. So the Gemara says that this is a great way of solving your problem. You're a Yisrael. You can't eat this mixture because it's got truma mixed in. And the truma is not bottled because it's 1 to 99. But why not just give it to a Kohen? Again, as far as that one saw is concerned, wherever it is in this mixture, you're giving it as a gift gratis to the Kohen. And as far as the 99... well, you can charge the Kohen for any of the three reasons that we discussed before, that there's no Isur Schora. Amar Avchia Barish Mei Di'ul is also Mershe Nechshedu Kohenim Ashvitz. That we're afraid that the Kohenim will be lax and will not be meticulous about observing the laws of Shvitz and being Shomer the Peros B'Kedusha Shvitz. Which means one of two things. Either they'll let the Peros rot, which you're not allowed to do, you have to eat them. Or alternatively, they may delay eating the fruits until after the Zman Bir, which you're not allowed to do. So the question is, why are Kohanim Chashudim Ashvius? I mean, it's clear from this Braisa that we suspect that Kohanim are not meticulous about the laws of Shvius. But why is that so? I mean, just because you're a Kohen and your father was a Kohen, your grandfather was a Kohen, therefore you're not careful about the laws of Shvius. I would think, Adarabba, a Kohen should see himself as someone who's more pious than Yisrael. He should be more careful. He's not allowed to go into Beis HaKvaris, and he can't be Mitami Lemesim, only for his close relatives. He has a candidacy of being the Kohen Gadol, the highest priest in all of Israel. So why would he be careless about Shavuos? So Rashi, Dibra Maskel Nechshedu. Do you see that, Rashi? So I'm going to have to borrow someone again. I left the Gemara here on the table, but somehow it disappeared. Rashi says, just one second, where is it? Nechshedu? I don't see it. Oh, here it is. Lahashos shvius acharzman bir. Why? Demoru bazeh hetera. He says the following. There's something called horas heter. Horas heter means when a Jew finds some sort of justification for his actions. So in his mind, he thinks it's okay. Like the Gemara says that you're not allowed to force someone to sell something. But the Gemara says that people in their minds think that as long as I pay him the money, I'm not a thief. So he's more a heter. Or for example, if there's a talis of hefker on the ground, it was a lost talis, so I know that you grabbed onto it first, but I'm going to grab onto it second, and I'm going to be more a heter, and I'm going to say to myself, well, you know what, it's hefker anyway, you're not losing anything, it wasn't your talis, I'm going to grab onto it. The Gemara has a case where a person borrowed 1,000, and then he says to the malva, I only borrowed 500. So the Gemara says he's more himself heter because right now he only has 500 in the bank to pay him, but he intends to pay up later on. So these are all cases of horas heter. So very often, unfortunately, we have a tendency of trying to look the other way and justifying it. So what is the reason why a kohen would be more heter and be careless about Kedusha Shvius? Says Rashi, Mishum the Ishtere Truma, because he's allowed to eat Truma. In other words, Truma for him is the same as Chulin for us. Not only that, Kodshe Kodshim. Let's say, for example, a Karban Ola, well, Ola is not a good example, but let's say a chatos or an osham, which are called kodesh kadoshim, who's allowed to eat the meat? Only a kohen. But Yisrael is not allowed to eat the meat of a chatos or an osham. Yisrael is only allowed to eat the meat of a shlamin. So the kohen is used to eating things that are kodesh, whether the trumo or the kodesh kodeshim, legabayu. So that's considered for him heter. You know, he doesn't look at something that's kodesh as being so elevated and outside of his bounds. Vashvius nami kedusha sa'aretzi. Now, I'm not sure I understand every single word in this Rashi, but Rashi is saying that shvius also, like truma and like kodesh kadoshim, like karbonos, has a certain element of kedusha. He calls it kedusha sa'aretz. It's not the kedusha of Matnas Kahuna or of Mizbeach. It has nothing to do with the Mizbeach. I mean, Shvius is not something that we designate for the Kohenim. Shvius is not something that goes on the Mizbeach. But nevertheless, it has Kedushas Ha'aretz. It means the ground of Eretz Yisrael, which is holy, generates a certain holiness in the peros that grow from that ground. So he thinks, you know, when it comes to things of Kedusha, of Hegdesh, he doesn't have to be careful about them because the Torah gave him total license and a green light to eat that which Yisrael could not eat, whether it's Truma or whether it's Kodesh Kadoshim. And the understanding of Rashi is that anything that is Mekudosh, it has an extra element of Kedusha, since he's on an element of extra level of Kedusha, it's Mutter for him. So he thinks that he doesn't have to treat Peres Shvius in a very holy way. So you've all heard of the Chazon Ish. Anybody know when he lived? Like how many centuries ago? In what century he lived? What do you say?
He was like 1950s.
Yeah, I mean, he lived in the 20th century. He's like almost a contemporary. His nephew is Reb Chaim Konevsky, if you heard of him. The Grach, they call him. Anyway, so we have the Chazon Ish. Now, the Chazon Ish, I think, is a little bit upset about the way we understand this Gemara. He thinks that maybe we were too superficial, we got a misimpression from Rashi. And he says the following. It doesn't mean that what the Rabbanim said was don't allow Kohanim to touch Peros Shvius because they're totally laid back and careless about Shvius. Ella, but rather, Chachamim asu geder bedover zeh, only in this particular case where you have a mixture, the Rabbanim went an extra mile and they say don't sell it. And the reason for that is that even though the Kohen is a very good, excellent candidate to buy this mixture, because the whole problem of the mixture is the Truma, and he can eat the Truma. But Kedei Lahotzi Milev HaKohen Resatol Shalhem, the Rabbanan used this particular case as a vehicle to convey the message that Kohen, and hey, smarten up. Begin to take Shvius more seriously. So again, it wasn't that there was some sort of absolute prohibition that you're not allowed to let Shvius out of your hands. You know, Kohen comes into your house and you got a pair of Shvius, you lock it up in the safe. They're not Chashurim Legamri, but there was a certain element, says the Chazon Ish, of a laid back attitude amongst Kohanim, because they consider the Kedusha of Truma to be greater than the kedusha of Perish Shvius, and if with in the context of their kedusha, they could, so to speak, feel like truma is chulin. You know, they treat it like chulin. So then that's the way they have this kind of attitude towards Perish Shvius, which, by the way, is not true at all. Because, meaning, this is a mistake if any kohen thinks this way, because truma is matnas kahuna. Shvius has nothing to do with the kohen. Shvius has kedusha. And the Kohen, no less than the Yisrael, has to treat the Perish Shvius with Kedusha. But he thinks in his mind, let's make an equation. This Kodesh and that's Kodesh. And Truma, I'm allowed to do whatever I want. I'm allowed to eat it. I can delay eating it. So I'm on a holy level. The Kohen is, so I don't have to worry about Kedusha Shvius.
As a Kohen, why not? The same argument can be used against Kohenim for everything. In other words, if their attitude is that because I'm up here and therefore I'm entitled to things that no one else is entitled to and I get it normally, then I can treat all of the mitzvot as if...
What we're talking about, Don, here is achila, right? Where the Kohen is on a special level of Kedusha as far as achila is concerned. So you have something that's normally sanctified, and now the Kohen is going to be mezalzel because he eats things that are sanctified as if they weren't sanctified. For him, there's no difference between a bread that's true and a bread that's chulin.
Okay.
And secondly, we're talking about a foodstuff that is prohibited or restricted because of its kedusha. So I don't know of another example other than shvius. I can't think of anything. Again, anything else that I would describe would be mutter for Kohen, but what's something that would be also to a Kohen, the same way it's also to Israel? It's a foodstuff, and it's also because of its kedusha. The only thing I can think of is Shvius.
Negative reference to Kohen Gadol Am Haaretz.
Right. Sometimes the Chazal say that the Kohen Gadol has his greatness, but he should know that he doesn't hold a candle to a Talmud Chacham, even if Talmud Chacham is a mamzer. That's the worst. So sometimes we have to put the Kohenim in their place only because we're dealing with food stuff that was sanctified, and they think that anything that's sanctified, that's food, I have a carte blanche attitude and I can be laid back about it, and I'll prove it to you from Truma and Kodesh Kodesh and Kodesh Kodesh. But in truth, they're making a big mistake by saying so, because Shvius has nothing to do with Kohenim. It's Kedushas Haaretz. It's not Kedushas Mizbeach, where the Kohen serves on the Mizbeach. It's not the Kedusha of Truma, which is a gift that's specifically earmarked for the Kohenim. And the Kohen is really overstepping his bounds. So the Chazon Ish claims that what we're seeing in front of us is not a full-fledged chashad. If you really had a chashad on Kohenim, you would not be allowed to invite a Kohen into your house when you're eating Peros Shvius. That far we never saw. The Chachamim looked for one venue, one scenario in which they could send a message to the Kohenim with a pointed forefinger, better be more careful about Shvius, because they were a little bit in their attitude towards Shvius laid back. So where did they find the excuse, so to speak, the moment that was ripe to send the Kohen in the message? They said that if it's true and mixed up with Shviyas, don't you dare sell it to a Kohen, even though the Kohen is allowed to buy the Shviyas. A Yisrael couldn't buy this mixer because it's Truma mixed in and the Truma is not Batel, but let the Kohen buy it. No. We're not going to let the Kohen buy it. And that's going to be a message to the Kohenim that they should be more careful about observing the laws of Shviyas. In other words, this is a way of transmitting to the Kohen that you should know that your status vis-a-vis Peres Shviyas is the same identical status as any Jew vis-a-vis Peres Shviyas. You have no special status with regard to Peres Shviyas, even though you do have a special status with regard to Truman Kodesh Kadosh. Says the Chazon Ish that when Reish Lakish looked at this guy who was mezalzel in Shviyas, he wasn't careful, he was working there. So he came to the conclusion it was a Kohen. He was doing the plowing of the land during Shviyas or pruning the vines during Shviyas. He says, in truth, Kohenim would not plow the ground during Shviyas, but they have an overall attitude that's a little bit laid back towards Shviyas, so that Reish Lakish came to the conclusion that if I have to imagine who is the person, to what shevet does he belong, who's doing this karisha, I'm going to say it's a Kohen. But says the Chazon Ish, don't jump the gun and draw the wrong conclusions here. We're not saying that the Kohenim did karisha during Shviyas, but if you don't know who it is that's doing this karisha and violating it, then you might want to assume it might have been a Kohen because the Kohen had this laid back attitude. But again, to say that they're chashudim straight across the board, that we're not going to accept. So now we get back to the story. We took a little bit of a digression from the story. Now we get back to the storyline. Amru means Rabbi Chi and Rav Shimon in response to Reish Lakish, because Reish Lakish got very, you know, he got very hot under the collar over here, and he's yelling at the Chacham, so to speak. I don't mean raising his voice, but why aren't you objecting here? You always come up with some sort of justification that this is not a prohibition. He was using barred land. He's only a high laborer. He's getting it, or because it's a lakel beis habad. So they turn to Reish Lakish and they say, "Troda hu dein." Dain means, is a pronoun, him, this one, is a troda. Now what does the word troda mean? The shoresh, the root of the word troda, is tarud. Tarud means someone who is obsessed, you know, he's like in a state of confusion. And Rashi says, Dibra Maskel Troda, if you take a look at it, he's a kantaron umatriach osonu bidvarav. He's taking this bundle, this burden of anxiety that he's walking around with, in which he thinks that there's some hanky-panky going on over here, and it must be these Kohanim, because they're the ones who are careless about Shviyas. Kantaron. Kantaron. What does the word kantaron mean? Kantaron is someone who is a maligner. He always finds fault with someone. He's a fault finder. Unfortunately, we know of too many such people in our communities. They, whatever you do, they always find a fault. They'll always malign someone. You know, they'll say, "Oh, the rabbi slept late, or he didn't come on time, his drasha stinks," you know what I mean? And they'll say about the Balkore, you know, "He's so boring," or "He's so this," "He's not," you know, they'll, whatever goes on in the community, you know, "I know better than you do." These are the maligners. You know, they find the negative, the fault finders, I call them.
There's a contrarian.
Ooh, interesting. We have to tell this to Moshe. What's his last name? Moses. And you know what I'm talking about? Moses. Gershon, you know what I mean. He sits, if I'm up front and I'm looking towards you, he sits in the back left. He looks to me like John Lennon. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure you've seen him a million times. He's a very slight fellow. He's actually married to a Gioris. She's from one of the eastern countries, you know, the Orient.
But you're on tape.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, she's a wonderful person. She's very you know what I mean?
Yeah, this fellow
is an expert in languages.
Oh, contrary. So I'll show you.
And point this out to him. He'll get very excited if he doesn't know this. He tries to show how many different languages developed from the Hebrew, from Lashon Kodesh.
Okay,
he may have a PhD, I'm not sure. But he's just a wonderful guy. His wife is wonderful. It's such a pleasure to see them walking down Ramah Kefalim together. They're really a paradigm of a very love relationship. Yeah. Anyway, he's an expert on this, so that's a good. So the word kantron, which comes from the word lekanter means I study something only to find fault in it. I look to see where I can find the fault. The Gemara tells us that there's a bird that's mentioned as a non-kosher bird in Parshas Re'eh. It's called a roah. Roah means a seer. So the Gemara says, why did the Lashon Kodesh call this bird, this trefa bird, a roah? So the Gemara says, because when it flies over, it flies from Bavel in its flight over Eretz Yisrael, and it sees an avela, it sees a carcass, and from up in the sky, swoops down and eats the avela. So my father said, so why is it a treif animal? Because anyone who's up in the ground, up in the air, and sees an avail, he sees a carcass in Eretz Yisrael. You know, those people who always find fault with Eretz Yisrael, that's a treif of bird. It's like the guy in the bleachers who tells you that the umpire called it a strike when it was really a ball. And he's 400 feet away from the plate, but he saw better than the umpire. You know what I'm saying? Those are the kantrons. So the Gemara is very upset. I mean, these two rabbis, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon, who are the great Amoraim, they're out there to be Ma'abra the Shana, and they are claiming about Reish Lakish that he's a fault finder. You know, he's a maligner. He's maligning the Kohanim.
So are they maligning with real things, or are they Choshe Mesher?
Well, in other words, here's the gray area, Jerry, between Reish Lakish's perspective and that of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon assume that, okay, maybe the Kohanim, to some extent, we proved it from that Braisa, are a little bit laid back about Shvius, but we're not going to assume that just because I see a Jew who's plowing his land on Shvius that he's violating the Issa Doraisa of Shvius. There must be an explanation for it, and we have to find what that explanation is, and the Gemara goes through the different cases. And therefore, they accuse Reish Lakish of being a maligner. We'll soon see that Reish Lakish had the opposite view. He thought that if you see a Jew who's doing Harisha during Shvius and he's doing it boldly on one of his fields, then we're not going to look for any justifications. We're going to come down hard on him and give him a whole tochacha, a whole rebuke. Now the Yad Ramah adds another element to the equation. What was the upshot of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon classifying Reish Lakish as a maligner? He says, "Ein roi shiye imanu." We should drop him out of the ballpark here as far as Iber Shana. We don't want such a person who is he's a maligner. You know, such a person shouldn't even be part of our group that's going to be Ma'abra the Shana. Even though, again, at this point we're not going to be Ma'abra the Shana, because in Asia we're not Ma'abra the Shana, but they're doing the Cheshbon and they're coming to, you know what, this guy is going to, whatever we say in the discussion, he's going to have some opinion. You know, he's going to always find some negative fault in it. We don't want him to be part of this. So Kimatullah Hassan, when they got to the place where they were going to figure out whether to be Ma'abra the Shana, which was up on a rooftop, so the Gemara says they ran up the ladder and Saliku Leigra, they took the ladder and lifted it up. Shalfu Lidarga Mituse. And by lifting up the ladder, they made it impossible for Reish Lakish to climb up to the roof. Yeah, how they got down from the roof, that's a different. I guess they would get down through the ladder, but I don't know what Reish Lakish. So, you know, you can imagine what Reish Lakish felt at this point. You know, he had accompanied them on this long trip. He thought they were guilty of finding some sort of justification for the Kohanim who were being mezalzel in Shviyas. And now, the whole purpose of his joining them was to be part of the Ibra Shana, and they're excluding him. I mean, again, you know, if it was me, I would be screaming, I would be calling the police, you know what I'm saying? So, Asa L'kami de Rabbi Yochanan. Now keep in mind that Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan had a very special relationship. Reish Lakish was the disciple of Rabbi Yochanan in the land of Israel, in Eretz Yisrael. And he wants to register his complaint against these Chachamim. And basically the thrust of his complaint to Rabbi is to tell Rabbi Yochanan that if these rabbis come to some conclusion about Ibur Shana, you should totally disqualify what they say. Do you realize how hot under the collar everything is? You know, this we've you know, upped the ante on the anger here that's going on over here. Amar Le. So Reish Lakish, in a naive way, asks a question. He doesn't mention the story yet. He says, B'nei Adam, he doesn't mention them by name, HaChashudim al HaShviyas, that they themselves are careless about Shviyas. K'sherim li'aber Hashana? He has said, as you know, someone who you consider a rabbi, and yet he's careless about Shviyas, would you rely on him for Ibur Shana? And since these rabbis became defenders of violators, then it's as if they themselves are suspect of violating. Do you hear this, Rabbi Osai? Reish Lakish thinks that if you are a sanegar means a defense attorney, for people who are violating the laws of Shviyas, like these Kohanim that we met on the way, and you come up with some defense, oh yeah, he was a laborer, he was only cutting prunes in order to, you know, pruning the thing in order to make the... He says they themselves are chashed on Shviyas. Hadar Omar. And he, Reish Lakish, didn't even give Rabbi Yochanan a moment of a breath to answer his question. But he goes back and he says the following. He says, "Lo kashali, maybe my question is not a valid question. Why are these rabbis okay and reliable for Ibur Shana? Midi dahavi, maybe their status is equal to," says Reish Lakish, "Shlosha roe bakar." If you remember the Mishnah says that if the two litigants agree to appoint three ignoramuses, right? They're just shepherds, they know nothing about the Jewish law, but they agree, both litigants, to accept their judgment, then we can rely on their decision. Again, not because we accept their logical analysis in the halakhic universe, but simply because there was an agreement amongst the litigants. So that now, if let's say, for example, you would introduce Roe Bakar to make the cheshbon to calculate whether there would be Ibur Shana or not, so we had a sugya about this in the first perek, and Rabbanon, if the Chachamim would be Ma'aber the Shana, it's not that they're relying on the calculations and the considerations of the Roe Bakar, they're absolutely disqualified for judgment, but Achush B'nayu Samach, they're going to make their own calculations. In other words, it could be that the Roy Bakker will indicate what the man on the street thinks, but it's not halachically binding. The courts are going to have to make their own decision. And if they don't make their own decision, then it's not a valid Ibur Shana. Says Reish Lakish, the same thing should apply here. If these rabbis, who are choshen on Shviyas, will make a decision that we have to be ma'abed the Shana, so it's no different than in three Roy Bakker would make the decision. They're totally unacceptable. They're totally disqualified. They're chashudim al Shviyas. We'll have to make our own decision. Now Reish Lakish doesn't give Rabbi Yochanan a moment of chance to answer that argument. V'hadar Ami continues, and he says, "Lo dami." You know what? It's not like the case of Roy Bakker. Why? Chasam. In the case of Roy Bakker, hadar imnu rabbanon. The Ibrua Lahu Shaita. The Rabbanan, at the end of the day, after they hear all the arguments and the decisions of the Roy Bakker, they're going to make their own decision, and the Ibur Shana is going to be effectuated by the Chachamim, not by the Roy Bakker. They're disqualified. Hacha, but here, in the case of these rabbis, Rabbi Chi and Rabbi Shimon, if they go ahead and then Ma'abra the Shana, then they are certainly part of the Bezdin. They make up a Bezdin which let's say is made up of five judges, of whatever number of judges there are, but these two rabbis are amongst those that make up the minyan. We need a certain number, a magic number, in order to decide whether there's Ibur Shana. Right, with the Mishnah, I think if I'm not mistaken, at the beginning of Masechet Sanhedrin records two opinions. I I'm embarrassed because somebody took the Gemara that I left here, and imagine you're teaching a class in a Gemara and you don't even have the Gemara in front of you. That's pretty embarrassing, is it not? Okay. Can you look back at the beginning of the Mishnah? At the beginning, I think there were two opinions about how many judges you need to make in the big long Mishnah.
No.
It should be this, you know, about two-thirds way down the page. It should say Ibur Shana on the first Mishnah, on Daf Beis Amud Aleph. All right. So I'll let you guys work on that, and you'll tell me what you find. Okay? Yeah, you have Ibur Shana there? In the first mission,
the first mission
in the Masechta, yeah. I think should mention Ibur Shana, if I remember correctly. Again, if somebody would be kind enough.
It says three, and then it says five.
So isn't there an opinion that you need five, yeah, and an opinion that you need seven at the end of the day? So imagine, Rabbi, these two rabbis are amongst the seven Dayanim judges who are going to decide whether there's Ibur Shana. Says Reish Lakish, that can't be. That's not like the case of Roy Bucker, where you know the Rabbanon are just going to relate to their decision as a little bit of an indicator, perhaps, or a citizen's opinion, but nothing more than that. But here, these two judges are making up they're comprising the Beis Din. The Beis Din needs seven judges for Ibur Shana, and two out of the seven are Roy Bucker. They're basically like shepherds because they don't know anything. Because if you're chashan on shviyas, you have the same status as someone who's a total ignoramus. And Reish Lakish quotes a principle called kesher rishayim hu. The kesher rishayim eino min haminyan. So this you're going to have to underline, because the next long piece of Gemara is all about this phrase called kesher rishayim hu. And kesher rishayim eino min haminyan. Kesher rishayim means when you have a group, and amongst that group you have evildoers, and they are part of the knots, you know what I mean? You knot them together, you braid them together. And in such a case, we have to throw out the entire group. We cannot allow for the integration of these rabbis who are chashed on shviyas into the group. Amar Rav Yochanan, finally, after all, you know, Reish Lakish he doesn't stop talking. Finally, he takes a breath, and Rav Yochanan says, Da'aka. Da'aka means this is my problem, this is my anguish, this is my tzara. What does it mean, this is my tzara? So here we have a major machlokes between Rashi and the Yad Ramah. Rashi learns that my tzara, says Rav Yochanan, is the fact that you call these people Rishayim, and that you apply to the great leaders of our generation, Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shimon, attach to them the appellation of Rishayim. I'm very anguished about that. The Yad Ramah says just the opposite. He says the tzara is that these chachamim are chashed on shviyas, and then we're going to go ahead and we're going to be misaber the shana based on these. So again, Rashi's learning that Rabbi Yochanan was confronting Reish Lakish and arguing against Reish Lakish. How could you apply the principle of Kesher Rishayim to these rabbis, the great rabbis? You know, he wants to defend. He's insulted, Rabbi Yochanan. But the Yad Ramah seems to be learning that the tzara that Rabbi Yochanan is complaining about when he says da'aka is that these rabbis who are chashed on shviyas, they're going to be ma'abra the shana. So now the word somehow gets back to Rav Chia and Rav Shimon that this whole conversation took place. Now you could imagine, Rabosai, listen carefully. Reish Lakish is accusing these rabbis of being chashed al shviyas, they have the same status as roei bakar, as shepherds, which means they're ignoramuses. And not only that, he calls them kesher rishayim. Ki also lekamedir Rav Yochanan, they themselves pushed their way into Rav Yochanan. They, you know, you can imagine they were banging on the table, and they were saying to Rav Yochanan, "How could you let this go by?" Amrule, Kari Lon Roe Bokar Ishlokish, your outstanding disciple classifies us and describes us as Roe Bokar, as totally the Ramesses. Velo Amrule Mar Velo Midi. You know, it's very similar. It's like Mita connected Mita. It's like Rish Lakish was complaining about the rabbis that they didn't say a word against these Jews who were violating Shvias. Now these rabbis are coming back to Rabbi Yochanan and complaining, "You didn't say a word when Rish Lakish insulted us with this terrible insult and calling us Roi Bokar." And by the way, Roi Bokar means ignoramuses in this context. It seems like the Chachamim were not complaining about the fact that Reish Lakish called them Rishayim. So I derive one conclusion here. It's worse to be an ignoramus than to be an evildoer. Amar Lahu, so Rav Yochanan said to them something very strange. He says, V'ikari lechu roe tzon mayabinale. If Reish Lakish would have called you roe tzon, what would I have said to him? Now wait a second. This doesn't make any sense. There's no communication here going on here. I mean, the rabbis are complaining that Rav Yochanan allowed this to go by when they were called ignoramuses by Reish Lakish. So Rav Yochanan responds, but if they would have called you not Roi Bokar, which are cattle, but rather Roi Tzon, what should I have said to you? So here we have a Rashi. And based on Rashi is a little bit ambiguous, but there's a commentary here that understands from Rashi that what was Rav Yochanan's comment? He was saying to them that Kevan shezilzaltem bo umachmas tzaro korolachem roe bokar, since you treated him, meaning Reish Lakish, with zilzal, you aren't impressed by the fact that Reish Lakish held that you should make a big mechah, a big protest. And because Reish Lakish was so pained by this, he called you Roi Bokar. He says, I wouldn't have even complained against Rav Yochanan had he called a Roi Tzon. Roi Bokar, I guess, are on a higher level, you know, they're more sophisticated in their occupation, they get a higher prep, perhaps they get a higher payment, than Roi Tzon are really the lowest level of ignoramuses. He says, Afilu mayakori lachem Roi Tzon lo eli ma lomar. Now again, it's a little bit strange that Rabbi Yochanan would make such a statement and push them off in such a way that as if to say that Reish Lakish could have said even worse about you, he could have even lowered your level. But some say that Rabbi Yochanan was just sort of avoiding their question or their criticism. He was just pushing them off, and he was saying, "Well, he didn't say about you that you're Roi Tzon. You know, he gave you at least that much." That much slack and that much covet that he called you Roi Bokar.
Not so bad.
What do you say?
That's not so bad.
Yeah, it's not so bad if you're Roi Bokar, that's really high class. You know, he didn't call you Roi Tzon. That was his way of pushing them away.
We had that in last week's portion. Yosef and Tzadik said to his brothers, when Paro asked you what your profession was, to say that you're Roi Bokar, not Roi Tzon.
Excellent.
Because it was a.
So again, at the end of the day, it comes out that Rav Yochanan seems to be on board here with his Talmud Reish Lakish, you know, that he didn't have to make a big, because he understood the pain that Reish Lakish was suffering over him. Now before we end for today, I just want to tell you that the next piece of Gemara, which is very long and complicated, is all about Kesher Rishayim. What is this entity called Kesher Rishayim, which is the phrase that Reish Lakish uses to convey the message that we can't accept the Iber Shana if part of the group of Dayanim, out of the seven, two of them are these two rabbis of Chir of Shimon and Chashan on Shvius. That's called Kesher Rishayim. So the Gemara now is going to go into a whole history about Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda to prove and illustrate what Kesher Rishayim is. So I'm just going to mention one or two sentences about this, the background, the historical background. I believe that tomorrow we'll pick this up more in depth. One of the offices in now you should know that Chizkiyahu HaMelech was a great tzaddik, and one of the offices in his kingship went sour. He really went bad. His name was Shivna or Shevna, and ultimately Shevna did something which is almost like a rebellion against Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and he placed the entire people of Israel into danger because of Ashur, which is called Assyria. They were the main adversaries of the Jewish people at that particular time in history. Again, every day it changes who our adversaries are, but at that time it was Ashur. And Sanherib was the king of Ashur, and he was going to go and destroy Yerushalayim with a military force that was made up, if I remember correctly, of 185,000 troops. And Shivna led a rebellion that and he gathered together all of his cohorts and he said, we have to capitulate and we can't fight against the Melech Ashur. We have to go and throw ourselves at his feet and say, we'll be your slaves, and that's how we're going to survive. And in this way he was undermining Chizkiyahu, who was the king of Judah. So Mirz Hashem, tomorrow we'll see that Shivna and his group were called Kesher Rishoyim, and that's going to give us the clue as to what Kesher Rishoyim is all about. Okay then? So we'll stop here.